Welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoons, the weekly podcast that revisits, reviews, and ridicules some of the world's weirdest animated series. We've got a very special episode for you guys today. This is our 10th episode of the podcast. Very, very excited.
Yay!
Yay. Round of applause. I'm your host, Dave Trumbore, as always. With me today, the Jitotten Monkey Bird, Sean Paul Ellis. What's up, buddy?
David.
There
How
he is.
Are you?
With his glorious introduction. I love it. And that Chongo Longo bilge rat, sure, from the Bay Area, Matt Barron. What's going on, man?
Oh, I am way stoked to get into this
one. Yeah, this is some good stuff. If you don't recognize that slang, then you are not aware of the Pirates of Dark Water. If you do recognize it, then you're very, very aware of the show, because they kind of created their own slang that kind of got worked into the zeitgeist over the years. So if you're a 30-year-old nerd like we are, then you definitely remember this stuff. But we'll get into that one. I want to give you guys a little bit of a history on this one. It's kind of convoluted. This series really did struggle to find an audience in the early days of the 1990s, but it's got kind of a fan following that's still relatively strong today, believe it or not. So this one was a Hanna-Barbera production, originally appeared on Fox Kids in 1991. It was originally a 5-episode miniseries. Now, in that 5-episode miniseries, we'll talk about these characters once we get into it, but a guy by the name of Roddy McDowell voiced a character named Niddler in the original 5 episodes. What Hanna-Barbera then did was they revised and sort of revamped these original episodes for a rebroadcast later on in 1991, just later on, and they brought Frank Welker in to actually do the voice for Niddler, as well as a ton of other characters. Frank Welker we've talked about a number of times on the show. We'll probably reference him more as we get into the other characters. But that's just an interesting kind of like side note for fans of the series that Welker replaced McDowell. So you've got your first 5 episodes. There were only a total of 21 ever produced. There are some rumors out there that there's some, you know, kind of mysterious content that was produced, whether it was concept art or clips or full episodes. That's never really come up since 1994 is pretty much the last time anybody's seen anything relatively new from Pirates of Dark Water. So you had the 5-episode miniseries to start it. You had an 8-episode, quote-unquote, season one on ABC. ABC dropped it. Fox picked it up for the last 8 episodes. And it's mostly because creator David Kirshner and producer Kaz Anzalotti, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, really, really pushed to get these last 8 episodes in, just so it didn't end way prematurely. Now, according to most fans, it still ended way prematurely, but that's what we got. So, unfortunately, that's all we have for Pirates of Dark Water. But to give you an idea of what the show was actually about, I'm going to turn it over to Matt.
So I have to tell you, I've watched this intro like dozens of times before we got this week. So I've got this thing like pretty much like just burned into the back of my skull.
Nice.
But to break it down for you pretty succinctly, the alien world of Myr is being devoured by Darkwater, and only Ren, a young prince, can stop it by finding the lost 13 treasures of Rule. At his side is a unlikely but loyal crew of misfits, and at his back is the evil pirate Lord Bloth, who will stop at nothing to get the treasures for himself. Yada, 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 high adventures, Pirates of Dark
Water. Yeah, high adventures on the sea, alien planet, you know, all that good stuff. Yeah, it was great, though. I mean, I still remembered, we've talked about this on previous shows where we have memories of these shows that are, you know, 20, 25 years old. We don't know if they're going to quite hold up. I'm happy to say that the episodes that I did watch were still good. Like, they still do hold up today. There's a couple little goofy things here and there, still kind of kidsy.
Yeah.
But this was one of those series.
Kind of like that, like, Saturday morning cartoon kitsch, you know?
Yeah, kind of like the knuckleheads, like, all clunking their heads together and falling over. Or, there's a lot of that stuff. But there was a lot of good serious stuff, too. Yeah, Conk especially.
Yes.
And his idiot henchmen.
It was like two weird leather daddies that were with him for like majority of the first like 7 episodes.
Yeah, there's some weird sort of like Mad Max kind of get up stuff. It was a little strange. I think Welker actually voiced both of those guys. I think they're the Lug twins, I think they're called. Or the Lug brothers. I think Welker voiced them. But since we're getting into some of the side characters, let's talk about our main crew here. So yeah.
Let's see. What was it on? There was Ren, Ioz, and Tula, and they were on the what was the name of that show?
Oh, the Wraith, bro.
The Wraith. I was like, God damn.
There are literally two ships, two named ships.
Well, I knew, but I was like, I was thinking of Blah
ships. In the entire world of Myrrh, only two ships that are on the sea at any given time.
Well, actually,
makes the Wraith so incredibly easy to track.
Yeah. Well, it's not that one. Oh, it's that one.
Oh, it's the other one. It's either the giant bone ship.
the maelstrom.
Right, right.
Yeah, if it's not the one we're on, it's got to be that one over there.
Must be the other one. Yeah, it's funny. So you've got this alien world that's like, it's basically water world.
Exactly what I thought, too.
Oh, my God,
it's
just so much water. And it's cool. I mean, you can do that in an animated series because it doesn't matter if you're drawing jungle, land, desert, ocean. Doesn't matter. If you're doing a live action, that's obviously way more expensive. But yeah, you've got this alien world that's a water world, and you've really only got two named ships that are out there. Now, we do see another, like, navy in the first couple of episodes, but again, that's getting ahead of ourselves. So let's start at the beginning here. We're not going to go through the entire episode kind of beat by beat, but the first episode obviously introduces our hero characters, starting with Ren. So anybody want to give us an introduction to how we meet young Mr. Ren?
He is a lighthouse keeper, and he sees a ship that is like down against like the rocks, and he's like, "Oh man, I have to go save him." Like,
he fucked up his job already. He wasn't doing real good at
the light. Not only like the lighthouse, like this lighthouse, like they are in the middle of like a terrible storm, and the light that is in said lighthouse, the whole reason, like the namesake of the stupid building, is not even on. Like he's already. Doing like his review, his annual assessment would just be like, you didn't even turn on the light in the lighthouse.
One
job. That's it. Like, and he just didn't accomplish it. So he sees this like ship that's like down.
Yeah, it's like, kind of foundering.
Crashed against like all the rocks, and like it just kind of like the reason I say that is, I preface everything with that is this: you realize, like in that instant, like just how foolhardy Ren as a character really is. Like he is ridiculously optimistic.
Oh yeah, very gung ho.
But just a dummy.
Yeah, he's dumb kid. He's basically a teenager. So I mean, that gives him room to grow, but it also gives him kind of like heroic qualities. Like he's a goof. He runs headlong into things. He'll figure it out on his way.
So, yeah, I mean he's brave. I'll give him that. But I mean, like they're just like. It's something that occurs throughout all the episodes that I had a chance to watch, where you're just like, oh my God, like if you would take 3 seconds and just think about what you're about to do, you would save yourself a world of pain and frustration.
It's interesting though, because he's really noble though too. We can get to a couple examples of that later, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, just right when he saves the guy who was like in that ship.
He doesn't know this guy. No idea.
Yeah,
who he is.
Exactly. And then like he has his mind completely blown by he's like, oh wait, that was my dad. And then, I actually openly laughed at this like emotional moment for.
Oh my God, I was crying. Like it was so funny.
When the sea just sucks the guy.
Yep, he's so to paint this picture. All right, so Ren has like
my son immediately dies. Sea sucks him out. I'd be like, wait,
he's like, well, peace out. See you later. Good luck.
It's like the wave knocks him back, but it takes his dad back out to the sea.
Yep. It was like Bernie's Weekend at Octopon.
Yeah. Like, there's, like, 2 seconds where he's just like, huh, that's weird. And then, like, he goes back up in the lighthouse, and, like, the woman that's, like, his caretaker, she's like, oh, no, that was your dad. And he's like, what?
Yeah, she's like, by the way, that guy down there? Yeah totally your dad.
I've got this. Here's a sword.
Here's a broken sword I've been holding behind this brick in the fireplace for 17 years. Other than the fact that it broke in half, it's in good shape.
Somebody would bark on a quest and then give him like a half a weapon.
They never explain it. Like, what the hell do I do with this thing? My dad just got sucked out to sea. I only knew him for 30 seconds.
I think I need maybe a minute to like kind of digest what just happened.
I do like that he comes back in though, and he's like, "There's some crazy guy. I rescued him, and then he told me it was my dad, and then he drowned." It's a Monday. What are you gonna do?
That was your dad, full morning.
Yeah, it's like, well, time for lunch.
Yeah.
Basically, so Primus, it's King Primus. He's the king of Octopon. We find out he was actually prisoner of this pirate lord, who's this big slovenly beast of a man that we'll get into in a little bit. He was a prisoner aboard his ship. He escaped and crashed ashore, coincidentally enough, where his son was at the lighthouse. So it was this weird kind of like glowing, I didn't understand exactly what was happening. He gave him this like glowing sight. Did you guys pick up on that? He kind of like touched his hand.
It was torn right from the pages of The Giver.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, he gave him all his memories. He's basically like, dude, what do you see? And he's like, I see a lot of weird blue glowing stuff. What's that building over there? And he's like, that could be the city of Octopon if you rebuild it. All right, gotta go. And then the wave sucks him back out. So
I think King Primus also gave Ren like the ability to just. So like, here's the thing is that, you know, obviously Ren is obviously the main protagonist. Yep. And like, the problem is that nobody believes him that he's like the king of Primus or he's the son of Primus. Right. And so,
because he's got no proof other than his actions.
Exactly. And so like, there's nothing there like, whatever. It's the challenge is that like, he complains about it in so many episodes. He's like, I wish somebody would take me seriously. I'm like, well, stop bitching.
Yeah, stop whining and do something.
Just stop complaining.
Well, now one person who does take him seriously is the aforementioned Pirate Lord Bloth, who is the next person to encounter him. Now, I love the character design for everybody because it's bizarre. It's really, really strange.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's very like eye-catching. It's very bold. But it's different, too. It's got a very like professional edge to it. Like, you could tell that the animators really put some time into these guys. But Bloth is probably my favorite design because he's enormous. I mean, the guy's huge.
Oh, yeah. He's like three times the size of Ren.
Like anybody else. Not just like in girth, but like in height, too. Yeah. He's not just like a fat slob. Like, he's a huge mountain of a man. The guy is crazy. And he's all scarred up, and he's got like yellow eyes, and one's like scarred over, and he's got tats, and he's got like spikes and everything on him. He's got like a half-chewed ear. Like, really, really bizarre, but cool character details. So, obviously, you know right off the bat, like, this guy is not to be fucked with, and he's probably going to be the series villain. Just going out on a limb here. So now we get introduced to an interesting character that if you're a fan of the flying monkeys from, you know, The Wizard of Oz, maybe you like these guys, the monkey birds. Maybe you don't. How do you feel about the monkey birds?
I thought it was actually, like, Midler was, I think, kind of, you know, the second time around watching it, I was like, okay, I get that he's like the comedy relief. Right. But at the same time, I was like, you know, he really is kind of like more part of the crew because he does like save some asses like pretty well.
Oh, dude, he can like pilot the ship. He can fly like the guys to safety or get something that's like out of reach. He surprisingly.
Just like the first or actually like just the whole time he like just constantly harps on how hungry he is. I'm like, God, Jesus, I get it. Like,
well, his
that's what made Midler my favorite character is that he's just like me. He's always thinking about food.
Oh, he's
like,
hungry.
You know, from meal to meal, he's just like, what am I eating next? He's
probably like, a Minga melon.
Minga melon. Like,
I love that the deal to like. So we'll get into the rest of the crew here since we talked about him. The deal to get him on board. Like to stay with the ship was that one of the other crew members would feed him three times a day. And he's like, yep, we're good. I don't need to share any of those treasures.
So to segue in, that's what Izaz says to him. It's just like, he's like, well, what are the benefits of being here? And Izaz is like, well, you get three meals a day.
Yeah, Izaz, just want to correct that so you're not saying like Izaz.
Oh, thank you, Izaz.
Yeah, you're good. So Izaz, they meet him kind of in this like tavern and they start talking loudly about treasure. Yeah, so that's kind of how this, like, scallywag. He's, like, your typical kind of pirate. You know, he's kind of skeezy. He's a little rough around the edges. But he's very, like, swarthy. You can tell he's got his sea legs, and he's been around for a while. He looks very weathered. He basically looks he's very weathered.
And when they steal the wraith at the beginning, that was the most hilarious thing to me. Like, the crackies make, like, geez, you thought we'd steal this ship? And he's like, yeah, we just did.
He's like, hurry up, get
which
the hell
out. Which is amazing because Ren has so many conflicts with himself later on in the series where he's just like, oh, we can't steal from people. I'm like, your fucking mode of transportation, you still ride out the gate.
And you're still riding around in it.
You're just like, yeah, you know, we don't need to take it back. I mean, like, we're already on it. Like, I'm already comfortable.
Yeah, you got your moral compass a little late there, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's great, too. Like, the ship is amazing. And I think they reference it later on in, like, later episodes. I think they do actually pay attention to that detail. And they find, like, who owned it previously or who won it from somebody else, like who kind of owns the title to this thing, because they run across
There's like a big history about the Wraith itself,
dude. That's so cool. I love that,
which
that
is
detail.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very neat. And it's cool because the ship is not only like, so it's a small kind of like sloop, it's very fast. It's dwarfed completely by Bloth's massive maelstrom ship, but it can do cool stuff like, oh, I don't know, go over a waterfall and then just kind of like glide in the sky.
Yeah, the mainsail can actually be removed and it turns into like a hang glider.
Yeah,
they use it. Like, there are times like where they'll just veer off the side of
the
like,
world, basically.
A waterfall, and the sail just like catches the wind and like guides them down. I think that's actually probably what my favorite thing about this show, because I like the two of you who watch this show, like I think I only kind of maybe watched one episode on television and I don't really remember anything about it. So like watching it this week was sort of was really my introduction to the show.
That's cool.
And it was not disappointing. I was not disappointed with it. Like, it was very good. And I enjoyed it, you know. It was, but like that, the whole idea of like the Wraith having a much deeper history than like what's present initially makes the lore of this of Myr so interesting. Like, there were times where I was just like, oh man, like I could really just use it like an episode that just explains a little bit more exposition about like, you know, what Ioz did previously, where the ship came from, which thankfully you get, you know. And so there were just all these things that I like, as I'm watching it, I'm just like, oh my god, like I really hope that they talk more about this thing.
And that's crazy because you never really hear that when we talk about any kind of shows, whether it's an animated series or anything. You're never like, man, I wish they had more exposition, because they usually layer it on pretty thick. But this show is so rich. Yeah.
I mean, I think the thing, like, I kind of equate this to ExoSquad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ExoSquad had a very rich history. It had a very complicated, like, involved plot. And, like, and sadly, both of them, I think, only got, like, 20-something episodes.
Yeah.
And then we're cut short.
I think they were really ahead of their time, because it wasn't, we weren't getting these kind of a little bit more serious. Now, granted, you got a monkey bird running around eating melons and dropping melons on people's heads, but, you know, it's kind of the fate of the world kind of thing that this kid is and his team are in a quest for. They're basically trying to save the world.
Right. Yeah. And to round out the final character that is participating in that quest, it is Tula.
Right.
And so she is, she's I don't know how to say this other than like you find out later she has some special skills.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like they didn't decide on that early on. They were like, eh, we'll just make her like a waitress, and then she shows up and she can like kind of sail and she can kind of kick ass, but we don't have anything special.
Well, I mean,
for her
to do. You find out much later on that like her real reason for jumping on the ship and kind of following Ren and Ioz and Nidler is that she is attempting to rescue this egomancer named Terron that is like from her home island, and it's like a big deal for her to be able to the island's called Andros, and so the whole Andros. There's like a big it's a big deal for her to like get Terron and help him and assist him. And in the process, Terron is able to ascertain that like she also has egomancer skills as well. And so that like gives her something else to do in the show. And it gives her, you know, it sort of justifies her purpose. Cause like for the first like five episodes, she's really just kind of like, you know, there are moments where she's just like, I'm a pirate and I'm swashbuckling. And you're just like, you were a barmaid. Like,
yeah, they didn't really know what
like,
to do with her. Yeah.
Doing?
So now she's kind of filled in this sort of like the D&D kind of like fantasy team requirements. You've got like your hero.
Yeah.
You've got kind of your, I don't want to say scout. What's the other word for like Ioz? Kind of your scoundrel, your rascal, your rogue. And then you've got,
I was gonna say rogue,
and then you've
the
got,
neutral good.
Neutral good. And then you've got your kind of your magic wielder, which is interesting because how much do they delve into like the magic versus just like this is just a thing that it is like like Darkwater, which we can talk about in a second too, because that's almost a character.
You know, actually, kind of the magic thing, like with the treasures and how it interfaces with Ren, like, not to get into the whole episode, but like they really hit on it in The Dark Dweller, which is kind of like, it's like a psychic link between Ren and the treasures. Because he kind of says that like obligatory line to like connect it for all the watchers of the show.
Right.
It's like, when he's holding like it,
the treasures listen to me. And I was like,
and they're like, yep, did you get that, kids? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, gotcha.
Exactly. So yeah, the treasures, I mean, basically listen to Ren once he's with the Dark Dweller. Before it was kind of like just a more, you know, kind of proximity to the Dark Water, they'd like do something, you know, like the compass. If you're near one, it points to a treasure. Well, stuff like that.
Let's talk about that too. Yeah, go ahead. You can finish your thought, and then I just want to make sure we cover like what the treasures are, what Dark Water is, and what this whole. We covered it in the synopsis a little bit, but I want to point to it a little more.
Right. So, I mean, it just as you go throughout, like you know, the series, it's, you know, you just find out like the more that like, you know, Ren isn't just looking for the treasures. Ren is really linked to the treasures.
Right. Which is kind of like, it goes back to what we talked about in that first episode where he had kind of this exchange of powers or vision or sight or gift or whatever with his dad. I'm assuming that's explained a little bit more, but probably never like fully satisfactorily because we only got 21 episodes of this. But yeah, just to back up a step. So like the synopsis mentions and the theme song at the beginning kind of mentions, there's 13 treasures of Rule. And these aren't necessarily good or evil items. You know, they're usually like gemstones embedded in different things, but they're not necessarily good or evil. What are you laughing about?
Just the fact that they're just called Rule. Like, they're not good, they're not evil.
I always thought it was like R-U-L or something, and I'm like, nope, it's just R-U-L-E. Yep, just like, straight up.
You would think that they'd be way more sinister,
right?
Like, you know, than what they are.
Something.
Yeah, I totally thought it was like R-U-L or something. And when I looked up like the actual like script and you know, Wikipedia for the show, I'm like, oh, it's Rule.
Oh, it's just to rule over you.
I get it. I was like, I get it now. But yeah, so, you know, I think the compass, which was given to Ren in the, like, you know, the first 5 minutes of the first episode.
In a strange way, but yeah.
Yeah, in a really, you know, by Ziggy Stardust. The compass just like points to different treasures if you're near them, which I've got to imagine if you're, you know, out at sea, that, you know, compass is not pointing much to anything at all for like weeks at a time.
And they have no map, which like Ioz actually makes mention of early on. He's like, this map is fake. What the hell am I doing out here? And he's like, oh yeah, we don't need that. I just got this compass thingy. So I think he was given his compass by Alamar, right? The giant crocodile creature.
Yep.
Bizarre.
It was like a giant, it was like
like a mini dragon.
Yeah.
And he basically is like there to just be like, hey, guess what? This isn't all about humans. There's going to be way more characters that you meet on your quest that are not humans. And we all have a say in this world. So that was kind of like, to me, that was a storyteller's way of just being like, hold on to your butts because there's a lot of crazy shit coming at you, like giant talking crocodiles and monkey birds and albino sailors and all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah. So yeah, the show is completely nuts, but in a great, great way. So yeah, he's given this pendant that he hangs around his neck, and it's a compass, like Matt said, and it shoots out this like blue laser to point him in the direction of a treasure that happens to be near. And now, by like the first episode's end, they already got one. They got one. So you think, like, done. Not a problem. These guys are going to be fine. They're going to get their 13.
This is so easy. This is the easiest quest in the world.
Easiest quest in the world. Yeah. Complicating things is Bloth. Now, there was sort of this this reveal of a, you know, a destiny kind of written in stone, inscribed with fire kind of thing. I tried to write it all down. I couldn't get it because it was so friggin' long. But it's like this rhyming scheme telling him basically like, there's 13 treasures. You and another will go to find them. Whoever gets them all at the end of the day pretty much rules Myr. And if you're good, you can hold the Dark Water at bay. And if you're evil, then Dark Water will pretty much consume the world. So now's probably a good time to talk about Dark Water. What do you think? It's in the title. Yeah. You'd think it'd show up right away, right?
Oh, you'd think it would show up like super
like
often.
Immediately. Yeah.
Nope. Yeah.
You gotta wait about an hour.
I mean, like, they're pirates, but you're just like, oh my gosh, like, there should be so much dark water. Oh, man, you are sorely mistaken.
Nope. You just keep waiting around, like, where is that dark water? We had an appointment.
Is Darkwater going to happen? Darkwater doesn't show up until episode 3.
And it's only a little puddle, a little splash.
Yeah. And like, you kind of like get the sense that you're just like, it seems to just magically appear.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't seem that there's like, I mean, there's, they are always on the lookout for it,
right.
Whether they're on the Wraith of the Maelstrom, like they're always on the lookout for Darkwater.
Well, and it's because Primus has hidden, apparently he's hidden these treasures within a realm of Darkwater. So at this point, it's not over the entire world, but there is one specific area of Myrrh that Darkwater is present in larger quantities than elsewhere. So the fact that he hid those treasures here makes them difficult to find and also incredibly dangerous for everybody to seek.
Yes. Right.
And what's interesting is, when I remember watching this show, like, you know, when it was on TV the first time around, I had like a much more like kind of quicksand imagining of Darkwater.
Right.
You know, it was like kind of a much more like naturally occurring, like, you know, oh, if I don't, you know, sail my ship in the way doesn't like drift over to me, I'm cool. You know, but then, like, you know, getting through a couple of the episodes and seeing the Dark Dweller, that's when it's like, oh, this is kind of like a larger extension of like a living thing.
Yeah, like, it's very like sentient.
You know, yeah, more malicious than like, you know, some sort of, you know,
just
natural
like a naturally
event. Kind of,
right. Like the first time you're introduced to it, like, they're like, Dark Water off the port bow. And they're like, fuck. And they just steer out of the way. But like,
yeah,
this barrel falls over, right? Yeah, but a barrel falls over, and they're like, oh, what's going to happen to that barrel when it touches that oil? It's like, oh, shit, and it just, like, swallows it up. And you're like, that's probably not
really good. It's like sentient, like, black water.
It
immediately attacks anything that's near it.
Yeah, it's like the Venom symbiote from Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Imagine that, but just, like, in its natural goop state where it's just, like, writhing around.
The interesting thing is, like, about all, like, the dark water is that, like, you, like, you can get sucked into dark water, and then, like, somebody can throw, like, a rope down, and they can pull you out. Like,
so it is kind of quicksandy, like Matt was saying.
Yeah, like, it's not, like, getting attacked by dark water or, like, touching dark water does not necessarily mean it's the end of you. It just means that, like, you're in a real dire strait. Like, you need to get out of there quickly. So, like, you can be rescued from it.
Right.
Like, you find out later in an episode that Matt and I watched that, like, you can essentially, like, take dark water down into like the center of the world of Myrrh.
Right.
And that's, I guess that kind of goes to this additional character that is sort of one of the antagonists in addition to Bloth, which is the Dark Dweller.
Yeah. And you guys can talk a little bit more about him because he definitely has a big part to play later. I only got to watch the first few episodes. So my memory of him is literally only, you know, 20 years old or so. So if you guys want to talk about him a little bit more, I do know he's voiced by Frank Welker again, though. So
Correct. That's
a feather in my cap.
So I mean, Dark Dweller is really, so the whole idea is that the Dark Dweller lives at the center of Myrrh, and he released this dark water. He was being held at bay by King Primus, as who was using the 13 treasures of Rule to essentially bind him to like the bottom of the ocean or like the center of the Earth or Myrrh.
And we should say too that when Ren does have these treasures kind of in hand, he can basically just hold one of them, plunge his fist into the water, and the dark water kind of like scatters away from it. It's like the only thing that prevents dark water from
like rescinding. Like it immediately makes dark water rescind. Like
and it's basically just the obvious light versus dark kind of thing. Like light scattering the darkness away. Very, very obvious.
And it, like, it comes about because like what was it, like he's in the water. Like him and like Ren and Bloth both get like sucked into the water at one point, and Terron is just like plunge the treasure into the dark water, and you're just like, what? If somebody would have said that, I'd have been like, all right, but you know, you also should probably fill me in on a little bit more of the history.
Yeah, and you owe me a treasure if this does not work.
Exactly.
And probably
so,
an
like,
arm.
So he plunges it in, and it's able to rescue him. Yep. And so, I mean, you just, even when he goes to like, even when him and Nidler get stuck in a coffin and they get sucked up by dark water, and it goes into the center of Myrrh, into the Dark Dweller's like lair. And like, there's like a little bit of dark water that kind of like skitters across the ground towards
so
them.
Cute.
And Ren's just like, oh, hey, look, dark water. And just like wipes the crystal over
just
it.
Just blasts
immediately
it.
Dies. Like, yeah. It's so ridiculous.
I love that it's like a transport, though. Like, you can use it as a transport. Like, you think, like, you see in the third episode, these kind of red shirts just get, like, swallowed up by this stuff, and you're like, that's it. Those guys are done. Dead. But it's interesting to see later on in future episodes, like, it's kind of a transport between the two, two realms kind of thing. But yeah.
So the whole idea was that while the Dark Dweller was like bound from these 13 treasures of Rule, that he created this like giant fissure in the ocean, and that allowed him to release this dark water. And this dark water essentially terrorizes everybody that's above as a result of him being stuck at like the center of this planet.
Yeah, and the idea is kind of like that it's going to eventually just spread over the entire
devour the entire planet of Mur
everywhere. Exactly.
Right.
Which is pretty cool stuff. I mean, it's a very on one hand, it's very basic, you know, light versus dark. It's about as basic as you can get. But on the other hand, the way that they decided to do it was sort of like the deep, you know, the Dark Dweller down in the depths of the oceans of Mur. And the mechanisms that they use to combat these things, like through the treasure and through, you know, heroic actions to get these treasures, or villainous actions to get these treasures, because actually these treasures go back and forth. They swap, you know, possessions a ton of different times. Like, you think you've got them all when you've got like eight, and you're like, man, we only got five more to go. And then Bloth comes in and he just like takes them all, and you're like, well, fuck, now we really got to get these other five and try to steal those back. And they went back and forth forever. So if this series would have found a bigger audience and wouldn't have been quite so expensive to produce, I think. This also happened around the time that Hanna-Barbera was basically going like bankrupt, and they got bought out by AOL Time Warner. So there were a lot of like financial business things going on behind the scenes that probably caused the show to, no pun intended, sink. But man, I didn't mean it, but it really, really did. Dark Water won, everybody. The Dark Water won. Ugh. But it was so good. So good.
Dark water is money. There's the connection.
You know, it's funny. I was trying to see, like, you know, is it like a an environmental thing? Like, are they talking about like oil spills? And not really. I don't think I never caught like.
Oh, are you serious?
I mean, well, I don't know.
I mean,
this whole thing foreshadowed like the whole BP oil spill.
It predicted it.
I was hoping somebody was going to work me in for like a BP like name drop, but you beat me to it.
The Dark Dweller. Bastard. BP the Dark Dweller.
So if anybody is interested in learning more about like the lore specifically about Darkwater, episode 8, The Beast in the Bell, has a lot of rich history about like the understanding of what the Darkwater is, as well as also the 13 Treasures of Rule, and the Dark Dweller has a lot of history in terms of like meeting you know, Dark Dweller for the first time, and sort of seeing that other layer or other world that he lives in, that, you know, is like the center of Mur.
Yeah, like a very different realm from the surface world. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some cool stuff here, yeah.
I don't know if later episodes, Matt, I know you watched the last episode that was produced, Living Treasure. I don't know if that had any additional information about that kind of crap.
Well, no, but, you know, it was interesting. Let's just say everything came to a hard stop in episode 21.
Yeah.
Basically, it was like, shut it down, we're done. But the one interesting thing was that the last treasure they found, which was this, like, you know, actually, it really kind of reminded me of the guy that gave Ren the compass, because it was like this sort of anthropomorphic dragon, you know, thing. Was an actual
Alamar?
Was an actual, actually it looked like kind of a baby Alamar, but it was a dragon kind of baby that was one of the treasures, and its power was that it could fix things. So like you see like Nibbler was like going after it, and it he messed up his wing. But, like, the little dragon just, like, touched his wing and, like, his feathers grew back. So at the end, they drop it off at Octopon, and, like, the thing, like, jumps over the side of the ship, climbs up on shore, and, like, touches one of the, you know, trees near the water. So then all the trees on Octopon, like, blew. So,
So he's like the golden child, I mean, just of Mur.
Yeah, pretty much. So it was, you know, I mean, it was just an interesting thing because it was like, okay, we're not just looking for like, you know, gaudy chunks of jewelry. Like, these things are like you know, one of them's like a living creature.
Yeah, so, I need to look up a list of like the different treasures, at least the ones that we got to see, because I think we only saw 8 of them at different times.
Yes.
Yeah.
They only recovered 8.
Yeah, the dragon thing was the 8th treasure that they found in episode 12.
So that was the last
one. I want to go back and ask about Alamar. Like when you like when you meet Alamar for the first time and he's like he gives Ren the compass. I was like, "Oh man, I was like this guy's a talking badass dragon."
Yeah. He's like Pete's like, dragon, but badass.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what a cool guy. Like this is pretty awesome. And then all of a sudden Block like enters the area, like they meet up with Ren and like they blow a hole in the wall and make it down to like where Alamar is located, and then to like take care of Alamar, like Bloth's crew just like throws grappling hooks over top of
everybody's
him
got and, grappling like, hooks I told you
and, like yeah like everybody's got grappling everybody's hooks got and so it's just like it's one of those things where like they throw these grappling hooks over top of Alamar. Granted, Alamar is like 3 to 4 times minimum.
Let's paint this picture. He's been protecting this temple for God knows how many years. He can breathe fire. He picks up Ren with one hand to tell him to calm down after Ren basically is like, Alamar, call off your beast. And he's like, it's me, boy, and you better learn some respect. He breathes fire. He's like an ancient warrior. He knows all this lore. And then he's brought down by a bunch of idiot pirates with grappling hooks.
They throw grappling hooks at him, and he just collapses to the ground and is just like, oh, I can't make it anymore.
He's done.
Oh, jeez.
He quite literally just, like, leans to the side and is like, Ren, the quest is yours now. And he just goes, meh.
and then Ren, again, being so, like, unbelievably foolhardy and optimistic, is just like, no, I'm going to save you. And, like, goes over and, like, knocks off
20 pirates.
Dude, and here's my favorite part.
That's a reoccurring... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I made notes about this scene because Bloth sends probably 50 pirates after him. Now, granted, they took down Alamar, apparently no problem. But this scrawny little lighthouse keeper who's never apparently had any military or weapons training in his life takes them all out. How does he take them out? By basically tripping them all so that they fall into, like, pools of, like, boiling water that are down in these fire caves. All of them. Every single one.
That is like such a recurring theme in this where, I mean, it really is just like a one versus many, you know, for many of the crew of the Wraith, like where like all of a sudden like they will be attacked.
Oh, and they're super powered somehow. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And then like they will just, and like Ayaz will just be like, he'll like hit one person and they'll all like just tumble on top of one another. Yeah. And you're just like, oh my God, like this guy, like Ayaz really doesn't do much in this show. Like he's
great comedic relief though. He's got the great one-liners, the slang. He's got that kind of, he's an anti-hero. So you kind of like, you love when he acts up and like, oh, I don't know, steals treasure or steals a ship or like swats Tula on the ass or, you know, he acts like a real jerk, but you kind of love the guy at the end. So I like him too. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just like, it's crazy, you know, the fact that like, In most situations, like what was it? I think I forget. Oh, in Dark Dweller, or one of the episodes that I watched, there's like a moment where like Conk runs into Bloth and is just like, he's just like, we should say Conk is voiced by Tim Curry.
And it's amazing because Conk is like this 1 foot tall, peg legged, dog faced pirate that just like rides on the back of his.
and it's hilarious. I love when Bloth looks at him and he's like, what do you want, big face? Like, I mean, that just killed me.
Oh, so
that's
good.
Hilarious.
Or the fact that Conk is like so loyal to Bloth, but Bloth, like every time he screws up, like Bloth throws Conk
to the Constrictus.
The Constrictus. Like they have this giant, like it kind of looks like a Kraken. It's like a Kraken alien worm that is in like the.
It's like Dune meets Alien.
Yep.
Yeah, it's in like the hull of Bloth's ship, the Maelstrom, and they just throw people to it all the time. This freaking Constrictus, like it's the reason that Conk has one leg. Yep.
Did you see what his peg leg doubles
as? Like Ren has been like thrown to it like 3 or 4 times and escapes every single time completely unscathed.
How lazy do you have to be that you've got like this entire city sized ship full of pirates and you're like, throw him to Constrictus? And they're like, he'd gotten out the last 2 times. Nope, just throw him in, it'll be fine. They'll be fine.
But, I mean, like,
Didn't you see what happened to the Rancor?
Exactly. Or the Sarlacc. Anything. Yeah. Come on, guys.
Yeah. It's just, like, it plays in more to Bloth's hubris.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, he just, like, he is so sure that, like, everything that he does is going to be super successful. Scourge of the Seas of Myrrh. Like, he is just... You know, he's the baddest of the bad. And,
he really, I mean,
you
know, he pretty much is, though. Because the thing is, the guys, the good guys, don't really win all that much. They just get away.
Yeah.
They never win. They never defeat this guy. He's got unlimited pirates. He's enormous. He's ox-sized, to quote some descriptions of him. His character is ox-sized. They never win. They just get away, which is all they really need to do. And that's an interesting change from the typical stuff we've been talking about where... You know, it's a good guy, it's a black hat versus white hat episode, and the white hats win. And then the next episode's the same thing. This has kind of like a through line. Yeah.
It's interesting in the episode 21, they were on an island with kind of like, you know, just like a bunch of disposable characters who like live there that were like kind of Amazonian Xena-style warriors. Nice. But those were that was like the first time like Bloth actually got like turned back.
Oh, interesting.
Which because of these, like the Amazonians plus, like, you know, Ren and Tula and Ios, like, you know, they're escaping. The Amazonians are fighting, like, Bloth. Bloth is trying to get to Ren, yada, yada, yada. Like, and they actually get, like, turned back. It wasn't, like, one of those, oh, they, like, you know, slip through the grip, like, one more time. Right. So.
No, that's interesting. I mean, the show did a really good job at keeping it fresh. I mean, granted, it was only 21 episodes. Maybe by 65, 85, it would have gotten kind of tired. But, man, there's just so much more. That we've got so many more questions. There were so many more things I wanted to see. And they showed a lot of that stuff in here. They show the different races, like we talked about, or the different nations or islands or cities or anything.
The world was huge. Oh, I would have, and that was one of the crazy things is, like, you know, you kind of got the feeling – maybe, like, once you get to the early teen number episodes where, you know, you could really have gone 5 or 6 seasons comfortably with this show. Like, you could go – like, those the shows we've watched where you're like, Jesus Christ, how did they make 85 of these things? Like, you know. But you look at this show and it's like – I mean, my obvious, you know, love of this show the first time it was on TV, like, 85 episodes – you could have, like, I mean, yeah, there would have been some recycling of, like, they escaped again and, like, this and that. But in 21, like, I really feel like they just got the tip of the iceberg.
Well, and we talked about this offline, too, when we were discussing kind of, like, what episodes we watched and how we were liking it. The pacing of this show is ridiculous. Like, way, way too fast. Now, granted,
That was my only complaint about the entire show is that, like, I mean – from the time, like, Ren's dad shows up on the beach...
And gets immediately sucked back into the ocean, yeah.
Yeah, and gets sucked back into the ocean. It's like, it's a couple minutes before he's meeting Alamar.
Right.
And, like, fighting back Bloth and all these pirates. Like, it is so quick. It's like almost like Botsmaster pace, where it was just like, we did this, and then we did this, and then we did this, and then we did this, and there were no wipes.
It's very, like caffeine-fueled,
It flowed seamlessly from like one thing to the next. And, you know, it leaves you asking so many questions. And I think a lot of times, like, you know, as we were saying, like, you know, there are these instances where like Ren or Ios or Tula is battling like 20 different pirates, you know, from Bloth's gang. And like they fight them all back like valiantly. And it's like one sword swipe and it's done. It feels like there's so much Deus Ex Machina that is in this, like, it just feels like everything is just like, oh, yeah, we did, like, I swung my sword, and then we just won.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my God. Like, it got a little bit frustrating in those, like, first nine episodes that I watched because I was just like, oh, they are just doing this every time. Yeah. Like, they don't even care, you know? It got a little bit annoying because things were going, like, so quickly because I think in those first nine episodes, they got like 4 of the 8 treasures that are like of Rule.
Right.
Well, man, what number was Dark Dweller? I think that was like 12.
I think
that was
I thought it was 12 too, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's not like, okay.
13. Well, 13 okay. Was Dark Dweller.
So 13, they had 7 treasures by 13.
Yeah. Yeah.
Between 13 to 21, they got 0 more. And in 21, they get 8.
Well, now here, I'll kind of try to explain that why. So the first 5 episodes, again, were that miniseries. So they kind of had to introduce these guys. This is why Darkwater didn't show up till episode 3, because that's kind of like your middle point. So you've introduced the good and bad guys, what their quest is, and then you throw this Darkwater in as like this weird kind of like wild card, and you're like, okay, how are they going to overcome that? And that's your first 5 episodes. The next run was 6 through 13, I guess. And then the last run, the problem was with this show, it was produced in such weird chunks that I'm amazed they have any of the continuity that they actually have. I think for those last 7 or 8, they were like, man, we really blitzed through half of our story already. Yeah. Let's slow it down a little bit. Rather
well, I mean,
than
the interesting thing is that like you find as a part of the lore, I think it was in episode 7, Drop of Darkness. Like you find out that like I believe King Primus King Primus had gone out on this quest previously, mm-hmm. like to recapture or like to find all the 13 treasures of Rule. Like right. He had originally bound the Dark Dweller, but then when the Dark Dweller created that fissure and released the Dark Water, there were like several like beings that like kind of made it up to the surface to like attack like people. It was like there was one like you find out like in episode 8 that has a lot of really good history that I highly recommend.
I do.
You're gonna like
now,
if you want to learn more about the history of it. There's this creature called Corruptus that is like one. Yeah, I know.
It's, I wonder what happened with that guy.
Yeah, I know. He was corrupt.
He's a goodie.
So like he, you find out that he was like one of the like main henchmen of the Dark Dweller that like came to the surface, and he was one of the guys that had scattered all of the different treasures like around Myr. And so you find out in episode 7, right before that, that King Primus was on this mission to like find all these treasures again. And I, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, 'cause I know you've seen some of the later episodes, but I think Primus only got 7 of the 13 treasures.
Correct. Yeah, I was just going to say.
And so Ren got one more.
Once they get 7, it was when they were about to leave like one of the ports. Tula said, you know, number 7 is important, not only because we're more than halfway there. It's because it's we've recovered the 7 original treasures your father did.
Right. Which is a nice moment for the young prince. Yeah.
Yeah.
So sweet. Do you guys ever find out why his sword was broken and what the sword is for other than just being a sword? Is there anything to that? Like, is it like a key that unlocks something? Is it like the Lord of the Rings lore? Anything like that?
Not in any of the episodes
I saw.
I feel like there's got to be something there because they wouldn't be like, eh, let's give him a sword and just break it. Like, there's just too much.
Episode 22.
Yeah, right? There's too much attention to detail that I feel like that
I really feel like, had this story continued, I felt like it would be one of those like things where they'd get like 12 of the 13 treasures, and then the compass would just like point either to the sword, or it would like in turn like point to Ren.
Or just
like,
glow.
The 13th treasure was inside of you. It's inside me. Time.
Let's like, cut out his heart.
Yeah. Fucking kidding.
Let's cut out his heart.
I would have lost my goddamn mind.
I just assumed that compass was one of the treasures, to be honest with you. Because it would be kind of odd that it would like be pointing to the stuff, but not be tied into it somehow, other than, you know?
No, I could see the compass not being a treasure. I could see it just sort of being like a beacon.
Just being a compass.
Which again is like one of the like, just to go back to like the idea that like he is a lighthouse attendant.
Yes.
Like it shines the way. This compass shines the way for him to like find his destiny.
Right.
Like, I mean, if you want to reach for a metaphor as much as I did,
I don't really think that's a reach. I mean, there's a reason that he started as a lighthouse keeper. I mean, not only so that his daddy can crash on the rocks and tell him his destiny and then get swept out to sea, But obviously,
that's how
wouldn't
I
that
want,
have been funny?
FYI, that's
I'm Primus.
My
you're my son. You're terrible at your job.
All right, see you later. And then just slides back
out.
That's
how I want my dad to die. I want my dad to like crash a boat and me to be like, oh my God, it should go down. And then the sea just sucks him back out.
Jesus.
And
I'm like, ugh. But then he tells you got to save the world in the meantime. That's kind of the road.
I'm down with that. Right, I mean, here's the thing: is that he's going to tell me that, but I'm only going to get it like halfway.
Well, and then you're just going to quit halfway through it. What I love, though, I pictured it as like, and I laughed at that moment, like you guys. I pictured it like a Family Guy thing where they do like a satire on it, and he just has like this sound effect, just like whoop when he comes up, and then just when he goes back down.
It's like a slide whistle. If yeah, they just had, like, played a slide.
And it's such an emotional, like, and just set up, the emotional setup of that point, and then just like, well, see you later, whoop, and gone.
I mean, and that's like the thing that, like, nobody here, like, I'm sorry.
For what?
Like, A, I don't want my dad to die. Like, but, like, B, like, if something like that
Bill,
happened,
if you're listening,
like,
yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. Like, if something like that had happened, like, I would be really emotional. I'd be like, oh man, like maybe I shouldn't go out into the sea. Like my dad was sucked into that thing. I would probably move
just
as far inland as possible.
Well, there is no like inland though. I mean, unless you're in like the jungles, like living with the monkey birds, or these creepy 8 foot tall albino sailors that live in the caverns or.
Oh, yeah.
I love this world, dude. I could watch it. I mean, I could watch 100 episodes of this stuff. Like, I could have watched years and years and years of this. I'm going to pose a question to you guys, and I'll make sure to have time for, like, final comments on this, too. But there's not really been talk. It's been talk among, like, the fan community. Like, I think IDW, that's a comics publisher, right? IDW. I think they wanted to do a Pirates of Dark Water comic for a while. That was probably about, 10 years ago, and that didn't come to fruition. There's been talk about getting the rights back from whoever the hell owns them now, and either trying to do like a live action movie or just bring the series back. Have you guys given any thought to like what a live action movie would look like, what the cast could be? Because this is something I actually wrote a while ago for Collider.
Let me jump in on the live action thing. I mean, you know, okay, yeah, you've got the benefit of like, you know, kind of having a fan base to this thing, but it's a pretty small fan base.
Oh, yeah.
And the last thing that anybody's really seen about it, unless they've been watching episodes online, you know, was almost 30 years ago at this point.
Well,
it
was 20 years once the last thing ended in syndication in 93. So, yeah, 20 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, like, okay, yeah, 21 years. So, you know, would I personally love to see a live action movie? Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, I think with CGI and just, you know,
motion
where
capture.
It is now, it would be amazing. You know, you've got, you know, definitely enough technology and like just movie like wherewithal to really capture like the imagination of the animated series.
Yeah.
On the other hand, like, you know, it's going to be one of those Hobbit style, you know, movies where you film the whole thing and they release it over the course of like 3 years,
right.
And they've got to break it up into like 3 2.5 hour movies to really do it properly.
Now,
otherwise, you're going to end up with like, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well, and that was my closest comparison because you can build a franchise out of pretty much anything these days. God knows Hollywood is doing it, and they're doing it with anything from, you know, things that were always popular like a Transformers or a Ninja Turtles. Down to things like Gem and the Holograms, or I kid you not, like Ouija boards, or Stretch Armstrong, shit like that. Like, somebody is taking all of these nostalgic properties and saying, can we turn it into a movie? And then question, you know, 1A, can we turn that movie into a franchise? So they're looking at all of this stuff, but this one I feel like has that potential. It just doesn't have the eyeballs on it. I would love to see it as almost like a sci-fi live-action series. As goofy as that sounds, sci-fi actually does some decent series.
I could definitely see like a mini series type.
Mini series would be fine to start, kind of like how
you know,
to start
kind of like a 4-season, 12-episode. Because like if people are buying into the popularity
right.
of Game of Thrones,
yeah.
It is not a long walk to get from Game of Thrones to Pirates.
It's
of Dark
not,
War.
Man. Just take it out to sea, and that's pretty much it.
So I'm going to disagree with both of you.
But on what?
Well, fuck yourself, Don.
Well, that's all the time
you.
We have for today.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, what's your take?
No, I really don't. I think a live action, whether it was a movie or a miniseries, would be a disservice to the show.
What?
I just don't think it would work. I really don't think it would work. Because I don't want somebody to like James Cameron Avatar this.
I mean, you'd have like, to, honestly, you'd have to.
I don't want it. Like, that's the opposite of what my goal would be. What I would love to see for this is David Kirshner. Mm-hmm. I'd love for him to get the rights back to this, right, and then to have him do a Kickstarter to be able to go through. I mean, like, I did the, you know, the animation for this show when you're watching it is not fantastic.
I gotta disagree. I mean, for 91,
it's good. It's for 91, it's good, you know, but like, it's not like it's okay.
Compared to today, though, it's mediocre,
but like, middle ground. I would like, I mean, I think with like, in terms of like what we have animation wise now, yes, like, I would love to be able to kind of retain that style of animation from when the show was actually on the air and create new episodes and continue and actually like finally flesh out and kind of give this the, you know, the additional time that it needs to be able to, I mean, because this 21 episodes, like, you get a lot of rich history, lore, and mythos of Murrah
and character too,
and it like, is and characters
a lot
too
of background,
and it's,
yeah,
and it's wonderful. And I mean, I think that, like, you know, if you put this like, here's the thing, this show is really kitschy. Like, there are moments of it where you're just like, oh my God. But then you realize, like, watching it, you're just like, but I love how ridiculous this is. Like, every time that, like, Ayaz and Tula does something dumb and Ren's just like, I don't believe it. I don't believe that they'd betray me. Like, believe it. They just stole stuff from people, again, you idiot. Right. Like, they, again. Like, it's, you know, it's just, it's not, like, the thing that's crazy, too, is that, like, these... this group of four gets thrown together so hastily and quick, mm-hmm, like so hastily. And like 3 seconds later, Ren is just like, nobody can beat our team. I'm like, you don't even fucking know these people, bro. Like,
he was going to drop off at the nearest port. Maybe, they're like, no, we'll hang out.
Maybe invest a little bit more time to like know your, like, know the people who are on your ship. Yeah. Because like every time they talk about this, or every time you flash back to the ship, like, it's not like there's additional like exposition about like, oh, well, that was a good story that you told them. They're just like, they haven't talked to each other.
No.
Like, Tula changes clothes at one point and they're just like, oh, we had extra clothes on ship? When the fuck did that happen?
Like, who got the clothes?
No idea.
Where'd you steal them from?
Like, they are so disconnected from each other's lives and they're living on a boat together that it's insanity. Like, you would think that like some point they'd just be like, well, I mean, we're all...
so,
trying to accomplish the same thing.
So where are you from?
Here's
we're all
what
trying
I'm
to do different
up?
Means. Yeah. Like, it's a little bit
weekend
different.
Weekend seminar, series of icebreakers.
Yeah, this
team
is,
comes together.
It's trust
this
building exercises.
This is a corporate retreat shit. Yes. Like, this is insane. But like, I think,
oh my
I think
God,
if you,
that would
I think
be hilarious if, as a corporate retreat. Like, here's what you have to do. 13 Treasures of Rule. Darkwater is eating this convention.
Watch out
center.
For this guy Bloth. He's a he's a rival corporate CEO. Hostile takeover.
I think, but I think doing this in any other medium other than like a web cartoon or a comic book would be a big disservice, because you have these moments, mm-hmm, where like, if you put this as a movie,
yep,
and like Ren waved his half of a sword,
yeah,
and like knocked over 20 pirates, I'd be in a movie theater and I'd be like, what the fuck is this?
But I mean,
but like, if
Michael
it's on
Bay
a,
does
but
that
on
a
cartoon,
daily basis. Yeah.
Yeah, but we fucking hate Michael Bay. Like, who is giving him this fucking money to keep crapping on these franchises?
Audience members.
Here's the thing. If you are listening to this as an audience member, stop going
stop
to
it.
Michael Bay movies.
Hear that, China?
They are fucking terrible. They are so terrible.
Sean is
just
very
knock
upset.
It the fuck off. Like, I know. I'm constantly angry about this. Like, it's just... I mean, I'm really not. I'm just like... it's so frustrating to see the fact that, like, he gets, like... Transformers 4, terrible movie, yep, amazing box office success.
It's the lowest
stop,
of the franchise, but it's still three-quarters of $1 billion worldwide. So
it is so frustrating.
Yep. No,
so,
that's
I mean, I think
pretty
to
much.
Do this, yeah, I think to do this in any other medium other than either its original cartoon or a comic book where you could still have that,
that'd
like,
be cool.
I mean, you know, I think it would be very challenging, because I think if you were to expose, if you were to expand the audience base to, you know, everybody, like if you were to make this accessible to everybody,
which I think it kind of is already.
And you,
to be honest
with you. But I mean, there's the reason that this is a cult classic. I think, you know, in terms of cartoons.
I gotta say, I think it was about the timing that it came out, and there's just a lot of just like a perfect storm of just shit that happened behind the scenes. To be honest with you,
right?
Because I think it's accessible to a lot of people, kids, teenagers, and then adults alike. I mean, if they like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, and a lot of the web information I found about it, like, you know, it's pretty honest about the fact that the reason why this show was canceled was because it was so expensive to produce.
Right.
You know, here's it's pretty upfront. Yeah. So.
David Kirshner, you now head David Kirshner Productions. Like, let's kickstart this, and let's pick up on episode 22. And let's move forward.
I would love to see, any kind of conclusion.
This is an amazing show. Like, even if you go one more episode,
wrap it up.
Where, like, let's make it like one of the, like, you know, like a movie. Like, let's make it like a 90-minute movie, and like we wrap up all the rest of this, and like we put a nice little bow on it. Like, I'd love to be able to see it in its original form as a cartoon.
And I will
also accept a comic book. But like, you do live action. You're gonna get fucking Johnny Depp as a pirate again, and like I'm gonna lose my mind because they're gonna ruin this. Like they're really gonna ruin this, and that would be to see somebody James Cameron, like or. Fucking Michael Bay ruin this would really frustrate me because I mean again like. I don't really remember watching this. In fact, the last time I remember I watched an episode of this, I was like somewhere outside of the King of Prussia Mall in Pennsylvania, and I was at a McDonald's.
Very specific.
And I sat down. Yeah, I know. It was really weird because like I sat down to like eat some food, and I looked up and just randomly Pirates of Darkwater was on the television, and I was like, oh my God, I haven't watched this in like – forever. And even when it was on, I only remember watching like one episode.
Yeah, I think
like,
Cartoon Network brought it back for a very brief amount of time.
Having reintroduced myself to this, like, it's very good. I highly recommend watching this. Like, there's just so much to it, and it's so interesting. And I'd love to give it a chance to end on its own terms.
And I will say this, we live in a culture now that, yes, our childhood memories and TV shows that we cherish are being exploited for millions and billions of dollars. But on the flip side of that, that's not a good thing, like Sean said, very passionately, and that's not a great thing. But on the flip side, the fact that it does bring attention to shows like this means that there is a chance that somewhere down the road, whether it's Kirshner or somebody else that has the rights to it, this could pop up again in another sense. Now, I did read
somewhere... Get on your shit, Kirshner.
I did read somewhere that Kirshner was a producer for On Titan AE.
Yeah, he was.
And some people think that was kind of his sort of his ending to Pirates of Darkwater, just happened to be set in space.
Really?
That's what people say. As a producer, though, I don't know if he was the writer, if he was any kind of, like, had a lot of creative input. That's what they say, but they also say that there's, like, you know, produced episodes that haven't been released and all that. So people, I think, just want to believe that. I would rather see... We started with a miniseries. I would love to close it out with a miniseries that wraps it all up one way or the other, and I would love to see Octopon kind of, like, restored as the crowning jewel of Myrrh, as it's called, in the series. I'd love to see it. Don't know if we will get to, but that's why we're here, bringing it to your attention. So any final thoughts on the show for you guys? It's kind of obvious that you recommend it. I do too, but just final thoughts.
I would say watch, you know, the original, you know, one through six episodes. Yeah. I would definitely recommend watching The Dark Dweller, and then watch episode 21. I think it's called The Living Treasure.
Yep.
Just so you can get an unbelievable sense of non-closure.
Right. So you can just frustrate yourself.
Yeah, just treat yourself to that and then carry that into Monday morning.
We didn't even talk about the slang. This is like one of the biggest parts.
We can wrap it up. So one of the...
All right, what's your favorite slang, Sean?
Okay. I love Noi Jatat.
Noi Jatat's good.
I mean, it's just like... Here's the thing is that like I know... So they bring in... they have like four expletives that they use in this. That are like just wonderful, and so Dave, you sent out the list.
Yeah,
so
just a few that I could find. Let me see. Let me bring it up.
So it was Chungo Lungo.
That's a good one.
My favorite was Chungo Lungo
because I like that one.
Every time I said it, I was like, that reminds me of Chumbawamba, which should also be an excellent.
I seriously thought that's what they said the first time, and like I had to back it up. Like, what are they? Oh, Chungo Lungo. Okay, cool.
Yep.
There's a Jenga Lang.
These are all just like expletives too. It's basically just all stuff that you would say, just like swearing. Basically, there's not much else to it other than that.
I feel like like no like. Now here's the thing: is that like I mean they use them all pretty much like synonymously, like you know.
Yeah, you can swap
in the series. Like, you can swap anything out, but like, is there any one that like when they used it at like any point in time? This is my question for you guys that I've been really interested. Is there any one that like they used where like you were just like, oh my god, like given the context of the dialogue, like I know exactly what that would translate in like modern slang.
I can't think of a specific one. I just know that they use modern expletives
that we use.
I just know that they use neujatat like fiercely. Like just, I think that one became like their favorite to just neujatat.
I feel like neujatat is just like, you fuck. Like I just, like, motherfuck. Yeah, I feel like that was what it was. Like, neujatat just was like, and like a hard MF.
Well, I think it listed jatat as like one of the expletives, like as the root. So I'm pretty sure jatat is fuck.
It's because gotta if be. You think,
like jatat yeah. monkey bird.
Exactly.
Like, fucking monkey
you
bird.
Fucking monkey
like,
bird.
Yeah. So and I feel like neujatat is. I feel like noi is like you. Like,
it, so could, it, or it could just fuck. Be like a modifier, just like to that next level. Just like, yeah. Holy fuck. Whatever.
Oh, fuck. They use neujatat. They like constantly. They swear so much in this
and it's
show.
So good. So like if you like Battlestar Galactica or any of the shows that kind of like or on Sci-Fi Defiance, they make up kind of their own you know, their own slang, stuff like that.
Lexicon.
Yeah, they have their own lexicon of slang, which is awesome. And I love it. Yeah, you'll definitely pick it up and be saying it if you watch the show even
what
once.
What is it? Scut Pango?
Yeah, like Scoot Pango, Scut Pango. I don't know if I ever heard that one.
It's later. It's
and there was
later
like Krell Eaters or like.
Yeah.
Oh, they got so many great insults and like Bloth is always like, well, twist my soul. And I'm like, whoa. What do I do with that?
Settle down, buddy. Ah,
twist my soul. Like when Ren escapes for the 50th time in two episodes. Yeah, there's a lot of good, just like little, insults and stuff too, and not just like pirate slang, not the same old stuff. They went the extra mile to really make it their own, which I thought was really cool. Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah,
that's great.
Definitely check this stuff out, man. I could probably talk about this more if I had seen more episodes.
I was gonna say, so the site, so this is rather hard to find.
Yeah,
show.
It's difficult.
So if you're listening and you're just like, I'm piqued my interest, I'd like to watch more. The website animeonair.com has tons of episodes. I think they actually have all 21. And there were like no ads to it. So, I mean, like, thank you, Anime on the Air,
for
like, making this available. Like, oh man, like,
hope
I don't know.
You're not
what
shut down
you
because
guys.
Of our podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, your traffic is going to. Go nowhere.
It's going to go up by 1%.
It's just going to be the three of us just watching this show.
That's what we've been doing. I will also plug piratesofdarkwater.net. It's a fan-run site. Tons of information. It's actually still pretty current. I think the last update was only maybe a month ago, maybe even more current than that. A lot of information up there. We're going to have links to this in the show notes and stuff too. And I will say, Sean, I don't know if you're going to mention this or not, but the entire series is available on DVD.
Yes.
It's unfortunately a bare bones DVD, and by that I mean it's basically just kind of like the same quality you would see online. There are no special features. There is no additional information. There's nothing, man. And it's just DVD. It's not Blu-ray, and it's only the 21 episodes. The good thing is they didn't split it up into like three different things for $30 a piece, but it is, you know, $30 for the 21 episodes. So a little steep. But if you're a fan and if you want to put your money where your mouth is, about seeing more of this stuff, check it out. Yeah, we'll have a link up.
I think it's only like $30 on Amazon, or just watch it for free on anime.
Yeah,
on
just head over there and watch them. Yeah.
Just head over there and watch it.
But I mean, honestly, like if Kirshner had the rights back to this and was like, guys, I need you to like, you know, buy this DVD or whatever, then I'd be okay with it. The fact that it's probably just going to like Time Warner's pockets, I'm a little less. A little less enthusiastic about doing that. So
here's the thing: if anybody has David Kirshner's like email
or contact information, he's still active, and
would love to see Pirates of Darkwater continue, I would love to have this conversation with him. We'd love to interview him.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
In any way, shape, or form, please email us SaturdayMorningCartoons@gmail.com.
And maybe he'll be showing up at Comic-Con, so I'll put the feelers out and see if.
I'd love to. So much stuff. Like, this is so good. Like, it's a shame. It really is a shame.
It is. I think this is the most passionate we've ever been about an episode in a positive light. We've definitely been this passionate on the other side of the scale.
Man, we would juxtaposition between this and Cops is ridiculous.
Oh, poor Cops. Or even this and like Turbo Teen, because that show.
it just sucks.
But yeah, man, 10 episodes in, I'm feeling pretty good. How about you guys?
Doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good shit.
I think we've worn Baron out. So that's pretty much the end of Pirates
of the Caribbean. I'm 3 hours behind you guys, so it's just settling in for mid-evening nap time.
Mid-evening nap time? What are you, a hobbit?
Kinda.
Jesus Christ. No, it's a tot. All right.
Oh, man. Well, all right.
So what else do you guys have coming up soon? Anything you want to plug? Let you know any shows coming up, any writings coming up?
Sure do.
Yeah, what you got?
You can see me this month. I am going to be performing at for Washington Improv Theater at the Source Theater on 14th Street in Washington, D.C., in between S and T. This coming July 26th, I have two shows. I will be at the 8 p.m. The 8 p.m. show and the 10 p.m. show. Which are totally different. No shows are the same. So I'll be performing improv with Knox, and we are doing our own spin on TED Talks, and they're called Knox Talks. We've had some really fun. We've had two really fun shows so far this month for this run. So hopefully the 26th at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. are going to be equally, if not more, ridiculous. And I mean, yeah, this previous show got really, really crazy. So you can buy tickets at WashingtonImprovTheater.com.
Excellent. We'll have that information up on the site as well. Matt, how's your writing career coming along?
It is actually just about ready to be published. Nice. So I'm going to be putting up the first 3 of 7 via, I'm going to link it through Twitter, but it's going to be on Tumblr. So look for it there.
Excellent. So are you still at Bag of Sandwiches on Twitter?
You know, I have not changed.
Damn it. Come on, man. One of our 7 listeners is going to take it from you. At Bag of Sandwiches. Well, where can we find you on Twitter?
I'm a registered if you don't.
All right, fine.
We just pressured you into becoming Bag of Sandwiches.
Well, I mean, I'm going to register it.
Just to keep Sean from it. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I'm going to keep him from it. No, I'm at MattSF07 on Twitter.
And Sean, where can we find you on the social media?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Sean Paul Ellis.
And on Twitter, you can find me at Dr. Claw MD. You can also find me over at Collider.com. Like I mentioned about Comic-Con, that'll be coming up this week, and it'll keep me pretty busy over the next week or so. We're going to have a lot of people down there covering a bunch of stuff, all the movie and TV news you need to know. So head over there to check it out and make sure to look for my name. I'll be posting a ton of stuff from there too. So you can also find us on our site for the podcast at SaturdayMorningCartoons.com. That's morning with a U. Remember that, Saturday Morning Cartoons. You can also check out our Tumblr page, SaturdayMorningCartoons.tumblr.com. Sean's been doing a great job over there. I haven't seen it today for the Pirates of Darkwater stuff, so I'm excited to check that out.
I've been posting a bunch of stuff on Pirates of Darkwater, so
nice.
I'm very happy.
It's going to be good stuff. And make sure to head over to our site, too, to get some more visual information and a little bit of a background on this show, as well. So that's it. Sean, I believe it is your pick coming up next week. Do you have one in mind that we're going to talk about on our 11th episode?
You guys are in trouble. Oh, Christ. We're going to be watching Dinosaurs.
You jitot. I knew you did. Chungalonga. I knew it was coming, but I thought maybe you'd
deal
forgot.
With it.
Right, you have to sing the theme song next week, though. How's that sound?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Sweet. Bring your metal guitar.
Oh, can't wait.
All right, guys. So we will see you next time on Saturday Morning Cartoons. Thanks for listening.